Now, were you born in Casper and your parents went to Billings, or were you born someplace else? And what was your background? How did that work?
My mom was Rosie the Riveter. She was literally, she was putting airplanes together for Boeing in Everett, Washington.
Okay.
So that's where I was born. I was born right in the middle of World War II in Everett. My grandmother, the ranch lady from Wyoming, she worked the ranches down around Saratoga, Rollins. She worked the Big Creek. She was a ranch cook.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather was the last of the old-time cowboys. He was always working one ranch or another. They'd move around. They worked the Big Creek, the A-Bar-A, the ZN. I spent my childhood in Casper visiting her in the summertime. So I kind of half grew up on the ranches down there in southern Wyoming with her. That's the background. My my mom was Rosie the Riveter. My dad was career Army. Grandma was a ranch lady. Grandpa was a cowboy.
You're out in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you listen to radio at it to get into that realm? Or how did you get started in radio?
Well, you know, I remember listening to Paul Harvey on the radio as mm-hmm. a kid. Radio was a big deal to me when I was a little kid. I listened to Bobby Benson and the Riders of the BBRB. You know, I listened to Straight Arrow. I listened to Gunsmoke, all of that. Grew up loving radio. And for some reason, I have a strange, very vivid memory of Paul Harvey, for what that's worth, you know. He was around for a long time, wasn't he? Talk about a career.
And the best.
Yeah. Parenthetically, I had a buddy up in Anchorage who was a cab driver, and he picked Paul Harvey up at the Hotel Captain Cook and took him out to the airport one time. Said he was a wonderful guy, just a wonderful man. Big tipper, too.
Mm.
So, but I digress. I grew up mostly in Casper, listening mm-hmm. to the radio, loving radio. Never with any ambition to be in radio. It was just the entertainment of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You told me that you were working at Safeway and loving it in Billings.
Yeah. The family ended up in Billings, and I spent half of my childhood up there. So I'm like 15 years old, and I'm a box boy for Safeway. Absolutely hated it. I had the Jim Croce working at the car wash blues, you know, really. I knew I was meant for better things than this. I hated that job. I came home from school one day. My sister, who's 2 years younger than me, she says, "Hey, Sarge, I was listening to the radio, and they're looking for a weekend announcer at COIN, K-O-Y-N, brand new station in town." It was the first time any of us had heard a full-time music station, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All of the stations at that time, they were typically network affiliates, and they had a little music here and there, but a lot of programs.
Soap operas,
yeah,
and that type of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. I ended up working for Cook Radio in Billings while they were still a CBS affiliate, and they were still running Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar on the weekend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been late 50s. Anyway, she says, "Hey, Sarge, they're looking for a weekend announcer at COIN. Why don't you go down and put in your application? You'd be good at that." And with no other qualifications than an ego and desire to leave Safeway, I went down and put in an application at COIN, and to everyone's astonishment, including my own, I got the job. Now, here's something interesting that I meant to tell you over lunch, and I forgot. The guy that hired me at COIN, 1958, Bob Eubanks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a manager at COIN at that time.
Wow.
I ended up pretty much the same as you, Dave. I was the weekend kid. I emptied the trash, and I pulled a weekend board shift, and I learned my way. The program director, who was an old pro named Jack Dunhaber, he left and went to KOOK, which was a CBS affiliate, and a lot of Les and Larry Elgart, that sort of thing.
And were they a daytimer then?
Cook? COIN was. Cook was not.
Okay.
Cook was a big, high-prestige CBS affiliate. Not sure. Most stations seemed to go off at midnight in those days, so I'm guessing that they went off at midnight.
But it was never called Cook, though, was it? Was it KOOK?
It was always KOOK, yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and we were under orders never to call it Cook and never ever to call it Kook. It later went rock and roll, you know.
Sure.
And I worked there during those years, too. But, the program director took me with him when he went to Cook, and I'm still in school. I'm still in high school. Then the family moves, this is around 1960, to Casper, back to Casper. So at this point, I'm a seasoned vet. I've got a couple of 3 years in. Even though I'm just a kid, I've been working in radio for about 3 years. I promptly went down to Katy after having listened around the dial, and that was the station I liked. So I went down to Katy and asked for a job. It was owned by Ken and Misha Prather at that time. I think they were in partnership with Pat Meenan. He was not a presence around the station in those days. I didn't see him. Somebody who worked at Katy later on in the new facility down there by the river told me that Pat was always around. Pat was a big presence. But when I was at Katy on McKinley Street, Ken and Misha, Pat wasn't around. I never saw much of him, but I believe he was a part owner. Anyway, I worked there when I was in high school. I was a high school kid, big radio stud at night, and just a general pain in the butt. I've told you, Dave, and I'm serious, I think I probably hold the record for having been fired and then rehired again at Katy more times than anyone else in the world. I must have been fired five times, six.
But you always worked at night?
Always got hired back. Yeah, in those days, I was the night guy. Later on in my radio career, I ended up mostly an afternoon drive guy. My metabolism is such that I never took to mornings. I was not a morning guy.
I can relate.
Yeah. If I was doing radio now, that's what I'd be doing, afternoon drive.
Your time at Katy, can you remember some of your contemporaries? Who was, in 61, 62?
Good pal of mine at that time was Armin Noble. Does that name mean anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Armin did the late night show, but it was on tape. Some kind of clunky early day automation system Katy had going, and he did this, what he called the Hootie Owl program at night. Armin was a good friend. Remember, there was a Tasty Freeze down there in the vicinity of the McKinley Street building.
The building is still there to this day.
Armin and I used to hit that Tasty Freeze a lot.
I have a little piece of tape where he talks about going to the pizza store, and the kid is saying, "Well, I'm hearing you on the radio," and Armin says something that, "Yeah, I've got to get back. My record's about ready to end." And
you know,
it's all recorded.
You know, when I was in high school, I also did an automated show, a two-hour rock show, rock and roll at night, and it was all automated, and I was able to listen to myself when I was out on a date or something like that, and I got to tell you, that is a kick in the butt. I mean, it's great fun to listen to yourself on the radio when you've got a pretty girl in the front seat. It's just it's great, and you know, there used to be a drive-in. You know where the old drive-in was here?
The Terrace.
Yeah. Used to do a half hour of rock and roll music on a 7-inch reel-to-reel tape every week for them. Just talking, the patter was that I was at the drive-in movie, hope you're enjoying the show, maybe it's time to get some popcorn, now here's Bobby V, you know. And I put together a half hour for the drive-in every week. They played it between movies. And that was a kick in the butt, too, to go to the drive-in and listen to myself at intermission time.
Let's see.
I didn't get paid for that, by the way.
Oh, well.
They comped me a ticket and anything I wanted from the snack bar. But don't forget, I was 16, you know?
Yeah. So.